101.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. When today's students hear about the Vietnam War, it's most likely from a history book. But many of the war's veterans still have stories to tell. An exhibit at the Barringer Crawford Museum in Covington depicts the war through the oral histories of Northern Kentucky veterans. We're going to talk today about it, and then we'll hear from the Center for Closing the Health Gap. It's launching an awareness campaign to show why those in poorer communities often have poorer health and a lower life expectancy. But first, joining me to talk about the Vietnam War exhibit, Barringer Crawford Museum Curator of Exhibits, Tiffany Hoppenjans, Northern Kentucky University Professor Emeritus of History, Dr. James Claypool, and Vietnam veteran Bernie Beck. He served in the Navy. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Let's start out talking, Tiffany, with you about why you decided to do this exhibit, to have this exhibit at the Barringer Crawford Museum.
Well, an exhibit about Vietnam and the Vietnam War era has been something that the Barringer Crawford Museum has wanted to do for quite some time. And it was just a matter of when is the best time to do it? When can we offer this to people that they'll want to participate, that it won't, that it'll evoke still feelings, but will still be accepting to the larger crowd, because this is touching so many people within our community. And Barringer Crawford Museum is about telling the community story, how Northern Kentucky's role is in with greater Cincinnati area and the Ohio Valley region. So we had an opening in our schedule, and we decided that this is what we were going to do. And because there are so many different histories written about the Vietnam War era, it stretched for such a long period of time and impacted so many people. We decided that we wanted to focus on what the soldiers, the veterans, had to say themselves about their own experiences, as well as members of the community, to tell the history through their own words, because they their experiences are more can tell more than any history textbook could.
Dr. Claypool, how did you get involved?
Well, they asked me to give a talk at the museum several weeks ago, and of course, I'm a French historian, and the French involvement in Vietnam piqued my interest, and then, of course, obviously, I was in the service during that period of time and followed the progression of the war.
Bernie, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience, and I assume you were one of the people interviewed for this exhibit.
Yes, I was. I came about because a friend told me about this whole exhibit, and I got really piqued about it because it was one of those times in my life that I vividly remember. And I was on board an aircraft carrier, the USS Independence, CVA 62, the big I. And we were in Vietnam for about a year on Yankee Station. And that's when I heard about it, I just threw myself into it.
Well, what year were you in Vietnam?
1965.
And tell us a little bit about some of the memories that you shared.
Oh my goodness, I can remember some of the people that were flying combat missions off our carrier were captured. One of them was, and I looked this up this morning, his name was Jeremiah Denton. He was there from 1965 until 1973 as a prisoner of war. He then became a senator from the state of Alabama, and I remember him vividly. He remembered me because when I finally got to talk to him years later, I kind of laughed on the phone and cackled, and he says, "I remember you."
Tiffany, tell us about, as you were putting the exhibit together and talking, where did you go about starting to find all the vets? Who all did you talk to, men and women?
Well, we had created a committee of veterans, as well as some members involved with the Vietnam Veterans Association in Northern Kentucky, and as well as exhibit committee members. We evolved it over time. We sent out a press release, and we had a few contacts from within our own volunteers, as well as members of the exhibit committee and members of this Vietnam exhibits committee. And Bernie Beck was one of the first people to contact me. And from there, as word spread, I started receiving phone calls almost on a daily basis. And in total, we have about 27 interviews and people that we highlight currently in the exhibit. Since the exhibit is opened, I've conducted about 5 or 6 more interviews, and there's several other people that have been contacting me and I've been in contact with. So it was something that a simple word got out. We sent the information about it on our Facebook page as well as our website and press releases, and we found something that touched within the community. We found what we were looking for, people who wanted to share their stories with us and the public as a way to bridge that gap and let people know that everybody's story is important and it has some significance to share, both within a personal sense and a historical sense.
Tell us about the exhibit, what all is there, and all three of you jump in. I know you've all been involved with it. What will people see if they come?
Well, the main feature of the exhibit are the interviews themselves. We conducted oral history interviews and took excerpts from those, as well as collected information and interviews from other resources. And so pictures and the quotes are the featured exhibit. To go along with that, many of the veterans and community members have loaned radio equipment, uniforms, personal items, a little handheld recording recorder so that they would send messages home back and forth, a wonderful video with some live interviews, as well as some historical aspect. To add context to the exhibit, we actually put a timeline of major events that occurred during the Vietnam War era, as well as local headlines as to what was being featured in the local papers.
Now, and a lot of people go in to see the exhibit and to learn about this. You have varying ages. And I know I grew up in a time when people talked about World War II. It always seemed to me like that was just such ancient history. I couldn't, even though I had, you know, some relatives, great uncles and that fought in the war. And I grew up, though, during Vietnam. I think there are an awful lot of people now, when they hear Vietnam, they think of it as that ancient history. Dr. Claypool, can you talk a little bit about that and what people really know about the war today, and how does it appear as compared to those of us that perhaps lived through it in the 70s?
Well, we certainly don't have enough time to begin to cover this, Marianne. I did, in fact, grow up during World War II, and it was a different war. It was a war that everybody supported. It was a war that we listened to on the radio rather than saw on the television, which in the case of Vietnam was something that was in our living room almost on a constant basis. At first, the support for the war, that's beginning in 1960 really, was very strong, and it grew in proportions. By the late 60s and early 70s, that had turned around because we saw the horrifying images on the television. We saw the body counts, and there was a great deal of turmoil involved in that. I tried to give that impression in the talk I gave, and it was amazing the response the audience gave me. Some of the people cried. Some of the people came up and shared their thoughts. And we see that war on the television. We see it in the newspapers. We see it in movies, and we see it in the music. So I played some of the music of the Vietnam era, and the one that I remember most that was very vivid was a song called Paint It Black, which kind of became the theme song of Vietnam.
Bernie, what about what you see with how people view you as a Vietnam vet? Has that changed over the years?
Oh, my God, yes. I'll reflect what Dr. Claypool said, is that, in effect, when I joined the Navy, I went there. I volunteered to go there. I knew that Vietnam, for me, has changed. It morphed over that period in the late 60s and in the 70s. When I got out of the Navy, I was living in Washington, D.C., in Alexandria, and the area there. And I was there when the 250,000 people came and surrounded the Pentagon, and I was outraged. I couldn't believe that these were all doing this. I mean, this is treasonous. And then by 73, my view had changed completely. I mean, I thought, why were we there? And I think a lot of people reflect now what I went through, the transition.
Do you talk to people often about your experience? Is it something that you that comes up in conversation, or do you keep it? I mean, there was a time when Vietnam vets didn't want anybody to know they were Vietnam vets.
That's correct. I don't have any problems talking about because I didn't have any of the. I mean, I was on a ship, an air conditioned ship, in the middle of the South China Sea. It's not like I've met people who have had some terrible experiences and memories of Vietnam, and I've met a bunch of those guys, and those people, some will talk about it and some won't. And PS, what is it, post-traumatic stress syndrome, mm-hmm. That's a real thing. PTSD. That's a real mm-hmm. thing.
Marianne, you know, I actually was in during that period of time. I volunteered for the Kentucky National Guard and spent 6 months in active duty and 5.5 years in the reserves. And the truth of the matter was we didn't pay much attention to the war's progress. America didn't really get involved until 1965 in any substantive right. way. And so it was an evolving sort of thing. It was just as evolving as the changes of the governments in Vietnam. And the whole process was an evolutionary thing. I think one of the culmination points, of course, was the shooting at Kent State, and that was followed up by an obligatory protest song, Ohio, four are dead in Ohio. And so this was a thing that just kept evolving, and that's I think it met its climax when we got out, but it'll never meet its climax. There's this lingering question why we were there. Was it the right thing to do? They talked about the domino theory. They talked about all the bad things that are going to happen. And yet today we interact with Vietnam as if it's a normal country.
Absolutely.
Do you think that people really want to learn about it now, or has it been such a shuttered part of the past that nobody wants to just even discuss it? The way World War II, you know, that was seen in many ways as this grand time. Is that ever going to come back that way for the Vietnam War and the Vietnam War vets?
I think there's a generation or two that really does want to know about the war, and then there's a generation that knows very little about it, very much. And whether they will become interested as time passes by, I don't know. We have people today who can't tell you who the president is. So you've got to deal with the various age segments and those that experienced it. My generation was patriotic, and I am a patriot. And we see that expressed in songs today, and we see but we see the negative too. We see Platoon and we see Full Metal Jacket. I think people are beginning to reflect and ponder and try to sort this out.
As you were talking with all of these vets that you interviewed, Tiffany, what was there any underlying theme to all of the stories they told, or was it all different?
There were a lot of different stories, and everybody had their one gem, but a running theme was that people wanted to tell their story so that they could be understood, that a lot of today in today's world, when a veteran, when somebody comes home, they're seen as a hero, support the veteran, not even despite what your feelings
support
are
on
sure. on the war. And for a lot of the Vietnam War, that wasn't the case. And people experienced either the fact that when they came home, they saw some protest. A couple people mentioned being spit upon when they came off the plane, or the fact that not to wear their uniforms, not even to really express the fact that they were a Vietnam veteran. And so some of this wanting to share the story so that people can understand that, yes, there was a lot of negative aspects. There were a lot of bad press and a lot of negative stories coming out and protests. But a lot of these people were just doing their job. They enlisted because if they didn't enlist, they were going to be drafted. They were doing what they were told. This was their role. And many of them supported what they were doing when they first came in. And as we all grow and change, some opinions changed about the war themselves with the veterans. A lot of them just want to help move beyond this and have a more comprehensive understanding of the Vietnam War era for the younger generations. And so they feel to tell their story is a way to move forward and to deal with the PTSD, the Agent Orange, the issues that they might be dealing with, and move forward to the next generation. What can we learn from my experience? What can we learn from other experiences so we don't repeat what happened again you know, and really connect with the younger generations.
You know, Marianne, the veteran of Vietnam was put in the unique position. He or she had to justify what they had done. That wasn't true of the veterans of World War One or Korea or World War Two, and we have to look at it in a perspective of history. And we actually fought 10 years there, but we had no 10-year plan. We had 10 one-year plans. Everything was targeted thinking, this is going to do it. This is going to win it. It's putting more troops in. It's bombing the North. It's doing the Hamlet pacification, and it just didn't work.
With that being the case, I think, where do you think it all goes? Do you think that it's easily taught? Do you think it's difficult to be taught now to really get that message across? Because I think people, certainly young people now, and as Tiffany mentioned, the whole support the troops aspect has been around for so long. Do you think they even understand that that wasn't always the case?
I don't think we understood the war. We didn't understand Vietnamese culture. We didn't understand their history. They were the first great agricultural nation, one of the earliest ones. They had been under Chinese domination, and then they'd been under the French domination. And for them, it was a war of national unification and patriotism that they were willing to sacrifice everything for. Ho Chi Minh, their leader, said he'd fight for 20 years. We were not willing to make the same sacrifices. We made many, many terrible sacrifices, but we were not going to stand there forever.
Let's talk a little bit more about the exhibit. So you've done a lot of work to put it all together, and it runs through August. Is that right?
Yes.
And how long do you think it takes if somebody goes through? I mean, how much time should they plan on?
An average visitor, I would say maybe about an hour. You want to be able to read some of the excerpts. There's a wonderful video that goes along with the exhibit, and to look at the exhibit itself, and the items on display. So about an hour to an hour and a half is a good amount of time. But we've had people come in who have spent a lot longer because they've either connected with one of the stories. One story draws you in, and then you move on to the next, and you get drawn in to all these different stories as you move through the exhibit. So before you know it, a couple hours have passed.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we're talking about an exhibit at the Beringer Crawford Museum, Vietnam, Our Story. It's running through August at the Beringer Crawford Museum in DeVue Park in Covington. Again, if you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook or Twitter. With all of the stories, do people wear headphones and actually get to hear these stories, or is it just that you've pulled quotes out? How does it work?
We have pulled quotes out, and the quotes are available to read, but by appointment, we're happy to share the interviews, the actual interviews themselves. We are not only a museum, we are a resource of historical information, and so we will be keeping copies of these interviews in our own archives and make them available to the public. That's part of what we want is hopefully a student will come to us and have a project to do about the Vietnam War in Northern Kentucky, and they'll be able to come to us and find out the research that we did, as well as listen to particular stories. And we have representatives from all the branches of military service.
Now, you mentioned that you had 27 or so done, but more have come in. Are you still willing to take in more interviews?
Always. And we have been focusing on veterans from Northern Kentucky or community members from Northern Kentucky, but from the whole region. It's everybody's story, and every story is unique. So if anybody wants to share their story, I would love to speak with them, and people can share as much or as little as they want. Some people are happy to talk about all of their experiences, others just limited segments. And we want to know more about not only people's services, but their thoughts while they were going through it. What was it like interacting with some of the people that they were serving with? Are there any interesting stories that really stand out in their heads? Even, you know, what they thought about enlisting or being drafted or being commissioned. So, and not just veterans themselves, community members. I've interviewed one gentleman who is a Vietnamese refugee, and he is offered a very unique take, and it's great to see that other side of the story, that not just Americans were involved in this. This is the Vietnam War. So this affected the country of Vietnam and Vietnamese citizens.
Bernd, go ahead.
I was thinking what you said is that I think that we have lost a lot of veterans of World War II, and I regret that. I have a passion for military history. What I think that this is accomplishing is that people are thirsty for knowledge about what happened over there and what happened to the people within our region. And it is incredible that it's imperative, I should say, that we need to hear those stories and to record these stories so that generations like me, who had two uncles in the war, one was a World War II, one was a B-17 gunner who survived 31 missions. And I still regret to this day that I didn't talk to him a little bit more about what his experiences was, although he was not that he was very reluctant to talk about it. And the other uncle was a corpsman in the Navy in the Pacific, and he never talked about what happened. So,
Do you have a lot of Vietnam vet friends now in the area that
yes.
do you all get together, and are you able to all talk? Do people still talk about it?
I didn't belong to a unit. I belonged to a ship, and that ship had people from all over the country. That ship still has reunions, none of which I've attended. But there are people here who fought together, and they've maintained their bonds. And I would say that the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, are those places where those veterans and people would gather. And I think those are the places that I hope that there will be, you know, some remembrance or some preservation of those memories.
You know, Marianne, to understand Vietnam, there are so many layers to it. We shouldn't just interview the people who were there and fought. We should interview people who were at home and what they were thinking.
Absolutely.
And also, we ought to look into what the French did, what their reaction was, and we also need to today find out some of the people who fled the country, some of the people who have remained in the country. This is a multi-layered thing that needs to be explored very deeply.
In a nutshell, because we don't have a lot of time, can you tell us the role of the French?
Yes. The French tried to reestablish their colonial presence. They had been there since 1802, and they were being treated as one of the four great powers, which was a myth. And they got caught up in a nationalistic war, tried to fight just like they had in World War II with a Maginot Line by having a series of forts, and got themselves surrounded at Dien Bien Phu in 1954 and overwhelmed. 89,000 French Union troops died during that war. 89,000, and at Dien Bien Phu, 8,000 of the 12,000 that were captured by the North Vietnamese never returned.
We do have a comment from Les who says, in the 60s, communism was still a real threat versus the way it's looked at today, so the war is seen in a different perspective. Her husband was a Vietnam vet, and she says he is getting involved in vet groups now since he's being treated differently now and was not respected back when he first came back. Do you think that's going to continue to improve, or has it gone as far as it's going to go?
I think it's going to continue to improve. With this run of this exhibit, since the exhibit is opened, several people have been wanting to share their stories now that they know that there's an outlet that people want to hear what veterans have to say, what community members have to say. I didn't grow up in the era, and progressively, as I've grown up, I've seen more and more more diverse portrayals and interpretations of the Vietnam War era. So I'm learning a lot more. I had an uncle who served in the Navy, and he didn't share anything. But now, as time goes on, he is sharing, and I'm so glad I know what I know now, and I can better understand him.
I think some people might say, gosh, you know, I did this, but that's just something I did, and they don't think of it as being that big a deal. It might be braggy. I mean, did you encourage other veterans, Bernie, to try to share their stories?
Absolutely.
Did you try to get out there and do that?
I almost felt like it was my duty. I mean, I went out, and places where I would normally hang out, I ended up at the the Fort Wright Museum on the Civil War, and they had a they have a Battery Hooper Day, and there were a number of veterans there. And I said, "Hey, you're from Vietnam, blah blah blah." And did you know about this? And can you would you interview or do you have memorabilia or anything, pictures, books? You know, and a lot of them responded very positively, and I think hopefully some of them went and saw Tiffany.
They did.
Well, I want to thank you all for being here. I really, really appreciate it. And we want everyone to know, of course, again, this is running through August 31st.
Yes.
And we have links and information all about the exhibit on our website, wvxu.org. Go to the Cincinnati Edition page and you'll find information there. We've been talking about the Vietnam Our Story exhibit at the Beringer Crawford Museum. My guests, Beringer Crawford Museum Curator of Exhibits, Tiffany Hoppenjams, Northern Kentucky University Professor Emeritus of History, Dr. James Claypool, and Vietnam veteran Bernie Beck, who served in the Navy. In a moment, we'll talk about how access to medical care and healthy foods is very different throughout Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mary Ann Zalesnik.